Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, folks. This is Bud Stridon on the line coming at you live at 3:30 in the afternoon. This is Gregorian, November 4th. This is another segment dedicated to the Progressive Party of Interests. If you take a look at the intent or the bio description of the show, we are attempting to localize and focalize the Oregon Progressive Peacehead Party with definitive social forms that redirect and reorient our collective will to the task at hand, which in this case is health and healing, first and foremost, looking at ways and means for us to take better care, first of ourselves and of others. And Bud Strider stands corrected and checked as I reviewed the live blogcast that we hosted with Chris Rich on November 3rd, which was the 420 segment. And I, in all humility, gave myself a chance to interview Chris while mixing my medicines. And I think we started out with one thing and ended up with another. And so bringing that back into perspective, it's been a nine-month soiree of creativity and very busy at that, campaigning and utilizing new tools and utilities to refine a view. And in the course of refining that view and defining the values and the building blocks of Measure 74, came into a very clear understanding, as I was reminded that what we're doing as a garden cultured economic peace movement is really redefining a quality of life that begins with the building blocks of biology from the roots up. And so we're looking at ways and means of really doing just that for you. And we're going to get on with this segment and know that we've titled this particular segment Homeless in America. And we're homeless in America, and we're orphans of this garden state, this garden nation, this green planet, this wet planet, and we're orphans because, quite frankly, we're operating outside of the laws of the biosphere. We're out of time, and most of us are wasting, spending, and killing time because we have yet to discover the law of time or the law of harmony, which is currently being obstructed by a five-day work week and a philosophy that time is money. Well, we're going to put the spin on that again today. We're very much looking forward to our interview with Montreville Blakely, the III, a gentleman that I've had the privy of knowing now since 2006. Montreville's a bluesman. He's got a large family. He lives in the Gorge, and he travels extensively, and he's always got his head filled with creative insights, and he's come a great distance, and we're privileged today to bring him on the wire, and see if he's if he's ready to do so, and he is in the switchboard there. So, with in just a moment, we're going to go ahead and get busy with that. But I chose five key tags for this segment, this description for the homeless in America would be Meet Mantra Man, and his works and his accomplishments, which can best be described as an outreach effort, a social networking effort with a particular focus on homelessness and how to avoid it, things that you can do in forwarding away. Of course, his work and endeavors boiled down into an outreach education program, and that program was spearheaded by some very big cats on the East Coast and beyond, and we'll allow him to give you the insight to that, and then some resources as to how you can plug into the homeschool, the Invisible College, the Garden Culture Economic Game Plan to stay gainfully self-employed and hopefully sovereign. Let's bring on Montreville Blakely. Montre, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How's it going, Jason?
It's going well, man. Thanks for tuning in, and here we are, you know, with this dynamite utility, and you're in Bend, Oregon.
Yes, I am.
15-20 minutes ago, you were just on a job site, and so you took time out to chat with us, and you're still working in many ways. And how do you do?
Well, I'm going to open up the comments. I have you on my Facebook, and anybody else is welcome to join me there. You'll find me at Montreville Blakely on Facebook. It's MontreVille. Blakely, BLAKELY. Again, M as in mountain, ONTRE, V as in Victor, ILLE. And then Blakely, like the island Blakely in Washington. I have been basically corresponding with Jason since the Give Us Your Poor project on the Scratch Track. He happens to be the percussionist that helped out and had lent a lot of his ideas and genius into the percussion work. And I was the other percussionist, believe it or not. I was the kit drummer on that one. I'm a jazz drummer by trade, coming from Harvard College down in L.A., and I studied down there in music for 2 years. But getting back to Jason, Jason has been very excited about this initiative, and one of the things and the reason why we're talking tonight is that the 74 initiative that was on the ballot, I have a son that's got a medical need for that, and it actually is saving his life. And he's been put on that therapy. And so handing this back to Jason, I want Jason to elaborate on the importance of the medical marijuana. And there's so many people out there. I mean, they've got people out there, that are addicted to heroin and other drugs, and they've got all these legal drugs and tailored drugs for these people to go and get help that's funded by the state, but they won't go with medical marijuana. And, I have, I'm one of the sojourners from Ashland, Oregon. I'm one of the first people that initiated breaking it up into the segments, into three segments for the commercial hemp, into the medicinal, and then the recreational. And I don't smoke myself. I mean, there's other people that do, but that's their business. But I don't. And, it's like a beer, or it's, to somebody else, it's a smoke. I'm not going to call the cops because somebody's got to go to jail because they're smoking a joint. That's not cool. But the thing is that when you look at things, to each his own on that level, when this thing gets legal, they're going to have to iron that out. But getting back to the medicinal, I'm all over the front page on that. I'm not going to go into the details and exploit my son, but he is in a computer science. He's down in Southern Oregon State University. His twin brother, that's a fraternal twin, is up there. Benjamin Blakely is up there in Portland State University, and he's a jazz bass player, and he's doing very well up there. He's been in the Cherry Fest and all that. So I've got a talented family. I've got 9 children altogether and maybe a couple others that I need to be responsible for that I don't know about because I was a young musician, and I'm just going to own up to that. So, you know, DNA is the road back to proof on that. But getting back into my son, and not getting off of the side here, medical marijuana is saving lives. It saved my son's life. And that I'm proud to have voted yes. My wife voted yes on that. So we doubled our votes, and it came really close into us winning. So this is the beginning of the tiebreaker, and I hope next time that they have it that they do that. Now, getting back to you, Jason, what do you think about all this?
Well, you know, again, we've already won in so many ways, and for those of you who are unaware that medical marijuana is legal, we're now moving into our 13th year of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, and you know, the act itself is written with quality of keenness, and that it really does require a relationship in order for you to participate. Now, most people are unaware that you can participate in the program without a chronic condition. That's where the caregiver comes in, the provider. And so in this case, we want to encourage more people to take a good look at what it means to be well themselves, what it means to extend wellness or a professional angle towards good care to others. And of course, cannabis is one ally in your quiver of ingredients or herbs that can help people restore homeostasis in the body. So in many ways,
I just wanted to add something. Why is there such a thing over the marophobia for medical marijuana? Why are they getting so riled up into not wanting this thing? When in fact, I mean, people, you know, I feel I have my feelings for abortion. I think that the government, there's three levels of that I believe that might be enacted that that the government can help out in incest rape and medical conditions. The mother's going to die or the infant's going to die. Those kinds of things. And I think that the other thing is that personal responsibility. I really do believe. I mean, we're in a country where they have it, a Roe versus Wade, where they're going out and they're killing babies because of the situation in that. That's okay to do that and to try to get that funded and do that. But now it's back to square one for them. They're really upset about it. But knowing for a fact that when I had a girlfriend and I was told that, we went to a clinic and a birth clinic, and I thought they were going to help the baby. And I had no idea what I was signing to. I didn't have an attorney there, clergy there, anybody else, and it just blew me out of the water. So, and I stopped the relationship. I forgave her years after that. It took me years, but it still kills me inside that I was not bright enough to question that. So what does the marophobia have to deal with medical marijuana, and why don't these people understand that it's saving lives? And if I could have saved my son's life, which it was, I would have done that. And I didn't have any idea. And so my son here, I've saved his life, and I'm continuing to fight this phobia that they have for medical marijuana. Back to you.
That's an excellent question, Montreville, and I'm going to, you know, and we can dialogue about that. I mean, till we're blue in the face, and we will, because the biggest reason why corporate America stands opposed to medical marijuana, and remember, we are a Christian nation. This is a Christian corporate nation, which is now this nation is operating based on a fundamental belief that time is money. And in this case, whoever owns your time owns your mind. Now, the two things that cannabis will do for you, the first thing it does is it induces a quality of timelessness. And that quality of timelessness is really a localized awareness that...
Well, you're talking from you're talking from the Native American point of view where they look at things because they use that rationale for their spirituality, and they seldom use the things that, for recreational or anything. They don't consider it that. They consider it being in touch with the spirit. So can you elaborate on how that ties over into what people do recreationally and what you're saying, that there's a medicinal help with that, even though they're doing it recreationally, there's a medicinal help.
Right. Well, the first thing we look at when we talk about the medicinal side is we have to look at these common references and these perceptions that are still used to dumb us down and demean cannabis sativa. One of them is this word pot or that or dope or grass, and pot now has been defined as an acronym for patients out of time, and essentially patients who are out of time are patients who are coming out of the illusion of time is money today, and slowing down long enough to actually know their own minds and be able to tune into their bodies to be able to actually assess how they really feel and what's going on for them inside so that they can take better care and really activate these dormant life force energies and begin to reorient themselves to the natural world.
That's a real good point, Jason. I was going to also elaborate on the other word, potency. That's what the original word was in use for that. It was rationalized as pot was potency. So basically it gave you something. It was giving you something. So, but not to get off the track on that, but here's another thing, an angle how people are treating each other over things. Do I have to qualify myself and smoke pot with you to be your friend?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Right, exactly. So people shouldn't look at their, you know, if somebody has a beer in their hand or a wine in their hand, and a person is smoking pot, that's their thing. Now if I don't want to smell the smoke, secondhand smoke, I can go a little distance away, and then and the person through still talk a rational conversation.
Right, right. Well, you know, hold on for just a second here, Mantra. We're gonna bring on Don Borby here. Don is he's coming into the medical marijuana program, and he's on the wire. We've now got Don on board. Don, you got a thought or two about it?
Yes, I would speak to the fact that there is a lot of hypocrisy with single issue kind of politics that has been so prevalent in the, especially the Republican Party throughout the country. And I'm concerned about single issue, which is feeds on low information and poorly educated people.
Good point.
Exploits the fact that it's very undereducated discussion. And I want to say also, on the positive side of especially this medical marijuana issue, that there is a number of people in the country who an untapped resource of highly educated and highly qualified people, doctors and nurses and caregivers, and who are actively participating in the society, who have not been heard from very often, and I want to hear them come forward more now. I want to hear more from them, because I'm aware, especially like in Oregon, that we have one of the best healthcare systems in the country, and I've just been participating in it. I just gotten aware of how really great this. This part of our state is, you know, and there are some very poor healthcare agencies that are overfunded and draining of our Medicare resources, who really are not contributing a great deal to such issues as the. Medical Marijuana Society, our community. And I want to see them come forward more.
Can I ask a question out of that? I believe that a lot of these underwriters for these liability insurance companies that are delving into the welfare aspects, I think there's a consideration in that, and that they override a lot because the medical community in itself, who's going to lose what? I think the fear of that, their phobia, is that some of the medicine or the turn, the curve of these people going to medical marijuana is going to take away some of the drug resources from the USDA, where they have qualified under the double-blind studies, where the insurance underwriters will write that, and it's okay to be on that program. Like I said, heroin addicts get that kind of help. I had a father that supposedly committed suicide. He was a heroin, and he was a cocaine addict, and he was a billionaire. And he had all kinds of money and all that, and, you know, things of that nature. I mean, those people are taken care of, and, you know, my father is dead because nobody really cared. You know, medical marijuana is something that's being shared because people really care. It's not a cash crop to where people are making, you know, over the table, they're making so much, you know, off of that. It's actually on a welfare trend, and it's just barely getting by to where it's doable. So why don't they adopt that and help the people that are on that? Like my son, he needs the help. If he didn't have that help, Sorry.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Okay, so.
I am so emotional at the fact that people are so benign in their mind, in their thinking, that I could have lost the sun. I need to get my composure back here. But you know what? You hear what I'm saying. And it just almost made it. Half the voting body, half of the people voted for it nearly. It almost won. You know, so that means that the education, this man that got on, the second guest, went off into a world of saying, why aren't they educated? Why don't they know? Why aren't we there yet? I agree with him.
Well, we're moving into the education part. Let's get we've got 8 minutes into left in the program, Mantra, and we've got
sorry about the emotionalism. I just my son, I've been through it. Okay.
It's all good. So now we're coming back around into the medicine part of it, because, you know, music is medicine. It does help us to get through, you know, this age of stupidity. And and we are moving into a new era where this education is coming into perspective. Let's talk a little bit about music with a vision, because it's not just about entertainment. It's not just about pacifying, with the blues anymore. It's really about music that's tied into a vision. And in this case, just give us a snapshot on the Give Us Your Homeless achievements. And let's look at this
Just to capsulize, I am a guitar player that was ushered in by the Legacy Films Incorporated through Dan Wilkins. That was done through a special indie film, and it was about the homeless. It was about the homeless in a way that would bring attention to America that we need to do something. Okay, we need to have the space. On my site, MontrevilleBlakely.com, you can go there, and I've got a yurt village. Now, I'm not correct about everything in life, but I'm trying my best. At least I'm trying to look for change, and I try to give out of my need. And I suggest that for everybody else in our country, that they need to get unselfish and start giving and caring and walking that mile, not just for one day and pat yourself on the back or send something to a foreign country and say that you did something for humanity. That's a cop-out. Really, to give from your need is more getting back into what they call the widow's mite, or, you know, the guy that helped the guy out of the ditch, but they were indifferent and they weren't supposed to speak to each other, and you could end up dead over it. You know, how do people make commitments out of there? So when you look at the giveusyourpoor.org and you look at the intent that all these people come together. Now, I'm a guitar player for Natalie Merchant and Friends, and that capsulized on that. They have done a wonderful job, Mr. John McGaugh and Mr. Dan Wilkins from Legacy Films, that got me there. And Jason's a part of this, too. Jason went and gave his heart and soul, and I sponsored seven people all together to sojourn with me for that. So there's a lot of credit due, and we need to start sharing. What happened with our compassion, our passion for compassion? That's all I'm saying.
Right.
There you go.
So that material, Mantra, that material passed through the hands of John Bon Jovi and Sting, and it was it Mellencamp that looked at it? A lot of big names, but it was Natalie Merchant that really picked up on it, and she flew you and Chris out to the University
well,
of Boston,
or
is that it?
The Give Us Your Poor flew Chris out. There's a lot of misconceptions. People, you know, they go on their own, they think, and then all of a sudden, you know, the musical chairs, and you end up with a different story.
The point being is that we were ushered in. Tracks of music.
Natalie took and gave from herself after she spent 3 years with her newborn daughter, which is great. And we were the first project out. During November 9th in 2006, we were on air as Person of the Week. I guess that was ABC or NBC? ABC, I think it was. And she shared us, Give Us Your Poor, Natalie Merchant, and Friends. So inside the studio, she shared that. But you can look at the giveusyourpoor.org, and you can get all that information there. Go to YouTube, put in Natalie Merchant and Friends, and then it'll have the concerts, the PSA work, the studio work, and all that. It's there. Natalie Merchant and Friends on YouTube. You can go to any one of the medias and put in Give Us Your Poor. That's the name of the album, and you'll have a line. There's Bonnie Raitt, Keb Moe, Bon Jovi, Mighty Sam McClain. There's Jewel that's involved in it, John Sebastian, John Mellencamp, Pete Seeger, Mario Frangoulis from Greece. You know, there's a lot of stuff on this album.
Well, this goes on, and it's tied into an outreach education program where graduate students from high school, I believe, are being informed about the realities of homelessness and being given some very definitive resources and tools and ways and means in order to develop the skills that they need so that they can live well. And, This is music with a vision.
Well, I for one was abandoned, and I can talk about it now. But my father ended up in my grandfather's shoes with all the money from the family, but he never owned up to me as a child or
six of
us. There's actually six of us. So that kind of homelessness. Home is where the heart is. And when you're abandoned, you feel like you have to earn your right. You're like you're standing outside the building or outside the crowd. And I've always felt that until I knew exactly what was going on. So homeless people feel the same. They feel like they're on the outside, and they're saying, hey, let me in.
Well, in letting you in, we're going to say thank you, Mantra and Don, for being on the wire here. We've got 2 minutes left in the show, and we're going to give you a scratch track from the Mantraville Collective Artists release. This
the true story.
This is a true story, and it's a beautiful one at that. Mantraville, you know, I got a lot of respect for you. I appreciate your music and you know, all the things that you do, all the ground that you cover.
Likewise, Jason, and I'm praying and meditating for you and your son to join together.
Thank you, because that's what I need the most. You know, I haven't seen him in 2.5 years. Anyhow. Ladies and gentlemen, Mantraville Lakeland.
Thank you for the opportunity to participate in this. This is a worthy cause.
They don't want to talk about it, the image at their door. She waits for the innkeeper, patiently in the storm. Said they didn't see her sitting. They didn't hear her cry. She swayed like she saw you hide it. No place for the night. I don't wanna steal your name, church. I don't want want to talk about it. The empty crossroads and the locked doors. She hoped for heaven's gate to get some love and some warmth. I've got to talk about this. They found her dead in the frozen rain. No one to hold her hand. Had to cross for the shame. I don't want to your name. I don't want to play the game. I don't want to steal the game. Ooh. Ooh. They don't talk about, they don't want to talk about this shame.